So stay with us. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. Special guest calling in on dial 911 for murder. Police departments kill another man. That's in Salinas this time, 3 days ago, just one day before the anniversary, the second anniversary of the SCPD killing of Happy John Dine. We'll have Mel Mason calling in with possibly some other calls from local folks who are concerned. Updates on the closing down of the Citizens Police Review Board's so-called independent investigation, and more. Stay with us. It's that time again, Sunday morning. Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, coming at you on 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norse. 2.5 hours in front of us with lots of stuff to cover. We're going to actually begin with another police shooting headlined in Friday's Monterey County Herald, but not even mentioned in the Sentinel. The headline was, "Standoff Proves Fatal, Salinas Police Kill Man Who Allegedly Lunged at Them with a Knife," by M. Christina Medina. And to give you an idea of how police cover this stuff, I'm going to read you this story with a straight face from the Monterey County Herald, and then we're hoping to hear in about 10 minutes from Mel Mason, a seaside activist who was particularly involved in investigating police misconduct in the case of Charles Vaughn Sr. You may remember the seaside man who was shot dead for wielding a corkscrew a year and a half ago, in May of 1998. And there was a hunger strike that his son, Charles Vaughn Jr., went on to protest that. And who knows, perhaps we can get Charles Vaughn Jr. to call in too, though we've been kind of rushing to put this show together. Maybe my producer will look into that and see if she can get in touch with him up in Oakland to give a call. Apparently, the attempt to get some kind of professional training and emergency response team for dealing with folks who are labeled psychiatric problems or mentally ill or what you will has not really gone forward, in spite of promises from our very own Representative Sam Bonham into Smithereens Farr, who is coming back, by the way, to visit his constituents Monday, in Watsonville. He's going to be showing up at his office from 10 to 1, according to that always reliable source, the Santa Cruz County Sentinel. So you might want to talk to him about this shooting. I'm going to read a little bit about the shooting, and then we're going to hopefully get some more direct information from Mel Mason, who's talked to at least one witness, the woman who, I guess she's the stepdaughter of the man who was killed, and whose house it was that the man was visiting or was in right before he was killed. Here's what the official newsmakers and news presenters would have us believe. A six-hour early morning standoff between a suicidal Salinas man and police ended Thursday when officers shot and killed the man as he allegedly lunged at them with a knife. 9-year veteran officer Stan Cooper was wounded during the incident. He suffered a gunshot wound to the right side of his groin when a bullet fired by another officer passed through a wall and into another room where Cooper was standing. He was taken to Natividad Medical Center, where he was listed in stable condition. This, again, is Friday's Herald. We're going to read you a couple of stories. Interjecting here, reports from Mel Mason and media reports from the other media, television media, called in by Scott Graham from yesterday, Channel 46 perhaps, are that there were 38 or more shots fired by these police officers to subdue this dangerous man with his knife. Police identified the dead man as 40-year-old Jose Hernandez of Seaside. Hernandez is visiting the modest cream-colored house at 624 St. Edwards Avenue in Salinas when someone from the home called police at 1:30 a.m. The caller reported that Hernandez was distraught and threatened to kill himself with a knife, said Salinas Police Lieutenant Henry Yoniyama. It should also be noted here that I heard from Mr. Mason earlier that the call was not a 911. It was a business call asking to talk to Salinas officers who were friends of the man who could come and talk to him. Instead, they sent the SWAT team who killed him, kind of dial 911 for murder. Police have been called to the Laurel Heights home on at least one other occasion to investigate a person considered to be a threat to himself, although it is unclear if Hernandez was the subject of those calls. In such cases, the person is typically taken to a hospital for a 48-hour mental evaluation. It was not clear Thursday if Hernandez had ever been hospitalized for mental instability. Shortly after Salinas police arrived at the house Thursday, members of the department's hostage negotiation team were called in because Hernandez refused to surrender the knife. According to police, Hernandez not only threatened to hurt himself, but vowed to hurt anyone else who entered the home. Well, I suppose some naive folks here might say he was defending his home, saying, "Stay the hell out of my house." Sometimes a person who's suicidal wants to kill himself. And I guess the police are trying to assist him in this case, or at least they did. He started two fires inside the home, which officers were able to put out, Yoniyama said. Hernandez allegedly set trash and furniture ablaze. Hernandez is believed to have retreated to a back area or another room in the house when members of the unit's violence suppression unit, similar to a SWAT team, entered to extinguish the fires. A number of people inside the home were safely evacuated, said Yoniyama, who did not disclose the names or relationship to the victim. People acquainted with Hernandez, possibly those who fled from the home Thursday, huddled and cried inside the Salinas police station but would not comment. We're interrupting this reading of the Friday's Monterey Herald to catch the phone.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Robert?
Yes.
Hi, this is Joe Grossman calling in.
Who is it? Joe Grossman. Joe, you're breaking up there. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Is my signal all right?
Your signal seems okay for the moment.
Okay.
And Joe, we've been reading. Have you been listening to our show? Or
No, I'm in King City right now, so I was just told that you're doing a show about the incident that happened in Salinas.
The killing of Jose Hernandez. That's
yes.
Correct.
Yes, and I understand that they shot him 38 times.
That's what I hear from Mel Mason and from secondhand from TV news reports.
Yeah. Right? Well, it's another example of police not receiving proper training and responding in a totally inappropriate way to a disturbed person.
Now, Joe, you run you host a television show on community television, and you're also challenging Representative Sam Farr in the upcoming election for U.S. Assembly,
that's
right?
Correct. No, for the U.S.
Not the State Assembly, but the U.S. House of Representatives.
That's correct.
I beg your pardon.
That's right.
And I know that I heard from Mel Mason tonight some rather critical words of Representative Farr, who's supposed to be, I guess, in the district tomorrow on a visit, some sort of visit from 10 to 1. He has his office hours in Watsonville, according to the Sentinel. Do you know anything about that?
Well, is he going to be there personally, or is it going to be his staff?
Yeah, that's the question. I don't know. And, of course, he does have an office in Santa Cruz, too, which, which I was twice arrested at last summer. Protesting his incredible support of the bombing of Yugoslavia without any kind of response to our queries about depleted uranium weapons, about the use of anti-personnel weapons. But putting that aside, because we're talking about the Jose Hernandez case, Mel Mason was rather concerned that Farr, who initially made some promises to appropriate money for emergency response, I guess response units that would go out with mental health workers and police officers, maybe social workers, in response to the killing of Charles Vaughn Sr., you may remember last year in Seaside.
Yes. No, I heard his son speak at the Veterans Memorial Building a couple of months ago.
Yes. Well, apparently, according to Mason, whom we're hoping to have on the air in a bit, Farr has completely ducked out of sight on that issue. There's no money forthcoming. And what we've got here is more police shootings. I mean, there was one in San Jose, about a month ago? Mark Garcia was shot dead after his his family called 911 because
right.
he was, you know, troubled and hysterical.
Well, the police are simply not being trained properly for this. Aside from the pointed at the officer who's under a very stressful situation in the accident, they're not receiving the proper training, and so. Lawsuits that have followed some of these kinds of incidents, you find that the city is sued as well as the commanding officers and all the way up the line for failing to provide training.
So as a candidate running on certainly a number of issues, but this is an important local one for a lot of us, what would be your suggestion and how would you bring this issue forward?
Well, on a federal level, I think there has to be an acknowledgement that there's a very high level of unjustified shootings occurring in situations where someone is mentally disturbed or doesn't need to be killed in order to stop them. I know that in Santa Cruz, although there have been some tragic situations, they have now instructed the officers in other ways of
hang on, Joe, you're breaking up.
If you lose my signal, I'll call you back in. Where they have successfully intervened without having to kill someone. I think that it's an appropriate thing for there to be some federal money for the training of police officers in non-lethal manner of subduing someone who's either mentally or emotionally disturbed or is doing something which really isn't going to result in anybody getting killed if it's handled properly. So I would say in some of these large appropriation bills there'd be a place for that.
Yeah, I know that we celebrated, certainly is not the word. We remember the death of Happy John Dine two
yes.
nights ago. He was, of course, shot by Officer Connor Carey at the corner of Soquel and Front on November 12, 1997. And that one of our concerns is not necessarily to heap abuse on the heads of Officer Connor Carey, though there were some people who felt very strongly about that situation, but to be concerned that the thing was never adequately investigated or responded to, that, you know, 3 hours later the police chief had his statement out, half a day later, the next morning, the DA and the police chief together had their story, and essentially it was all wrapped up before any investigation happened, and now we hear that even the independent investigation that's coming out from our own Citizens Police Review Board is being told by the City Council, you cannot interview subject officers and you cannot make this report public. I know this is a little bit off the subject, but I think, do you have any reaction to that general ruling by the City Council?
Well, I don't believe that public documents should be kept secret, and I don't see why individuals can't be interviewed as long as it's done in a dignified, factual way where people are not put on the defensive. They're asked to produce an answer to a question. It can even be done in writing. I mean, there has to be, we don't run secret government. There needs to be a free flow of information, and if a question is not legitimate, then the person who's being asked to respond should say, I don't think this is a legitimate question, and then that can be debated. I think we want to avoid confrontation in the investigatory process. I think it needs to be a dignified, respectful thing, but the information has to be obtained.
I appreciate that, Joe. If only Mayor Byers held your view.
Well, talk to her. I'm sure she'll agree.
If she agreed, I would have hoped she would have actually allowed the independent investigator, Diana Christensen, to call the subject officers, and apparently that is not going to happen. Instead, no officers are going to be called. The Police Review Board is going to simply look over into the reports that the police department investigating itself has produced. So that's the situation we're in now with that. Well, listen, are you coming back to town? Or are you going to be back?
Yeah, I'd like to mention just briefly where I am right now and why.
Okay.
I'm in King City with Nicholas Whitehead. As part of my campaign, we're coming here to walk with the strikers who are striking Basic Vegetable. It is a large food processing company that's located here, and they've been out on strike for 3.5 weeks. The company has tried to cut their work week, reduce the salary of starting workers very dramatically, charge for health insurance, have a 3-year period in which wages are frozen. They have refused to negotiate, essentially. The sense here is that it's an attempt to break the union, which is Teamsters Local 890. And there's a very large march here today that we've just pulled up to, and we can see hundreds of people here that are going to march to protest against Basic Vegetable. I do want to add that Basic Vegetable is part of Basic American Foods in Idaho, and that Sam Farr, the congressman, receives money, PAC money, from this corporation. And I have heard some information, which I'm going to confirm today, which, if it is true, is even more devastating than that. So that's all I want to say about that right now. But Sam Farr needs to take a stand on this issue. I am firmly with the strikers. I support their demands for fair and living wages, and I do not support the management in this case at all. They need to come to the negotiating table. This is a key labor issue in this congressional district, and Sam Farr must make it clear where he stands on this. I stand with the strikers. The company has to pay a living wage, and they're not doing so.
Now, tell me, Joe, how can people help these strikers? How many? This has been going on for, what, 2 or 3 months now?
Well, they could call, they can look in the phone book for the number, or I can give it to you in a moment,
sure.
Of Teamsters Local 890, which is located, they have offices in a variety of places, but they could call Fritz Conley in Salinas. He has an 800 number, 1-800-300-5743.
1-800-300-5743.
Or if that doesn't go through, the direct line to Salinas is 424-5743.
Okay.
So I have a feeling that they both work, but 424-5743 is in the 831 area code, and this is a brutal attempt by management to bust the union. They negotiated a satisfactory contract in Gilroy a few months ago that Basic Vegetable ought to go along with. Sam Farr takes money from management. I want to hear what Sam Farr's position is on this strike.
Joe, thank you. And if you get any more information, breaking news on
okay.
the strike, please give us a call back. We're on the air till 1:30.
I may just do that.
And Joe, how can people reach you if they want to help your campaign?
Call information, Joe Grossman, in the phone book, 429-6477. 70. If you didn't write that down,
429-6470.
Right, and tomorrow night at Loudoun Nelson Community Center at 7:30, I will be giving a speech about my positions,
mm-hmm.
and I'll also be talking at the Democratic Women's Club on Wednesday. Anyone who supports me should come to that. It's at 11:30 at Cavalry Episcopal at 532 Center Street in Santa Cruz. At 11:30 this Wednesday, but Monday night, tomorrow night, Loudoun Nelson, 7:30. I'd be delighted to talk to anybody and get to know them.
Thank you, Joe. And
thanks,
we'll,
Robert.
We'll talk to you more later.
Say hello to Mel.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And that was Joe Grossman, who is running a congressional campaign for the November 2000 election, and apparently really is concerned about issues long before that election happens, and hopefully he will be concerned long after, because I think his chances are very slim. But if he can educate the public, then he's doing more than Farr is doing with all his money and all his power.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hi, this is Mel Mason.
Hi, Mel. We were just talking about you. I was reading the Monterey Peninsula Herald's initial opening cover-up story, as I called it. I don't know. I kind of jumped to these conclusions. The report on Jose Hernandez.
Yes.
And his shooting, I guess, on, what was it, Wednesday?
Right.
Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
And you, you have been kind of looking into this issue rather intently and intensely. Huh?
Absolutely, and I've been doing that as the chairperson of the Charles E. Vaughn Sr. Task Force on Mental Health Police Practices, and our task force was formed after my friend Charles Vaughn Sr. was killed in May of 1998 by Seaside Police. And of course we've had people who have been diagnosed with mental illness who have been killed by other police departments in that area as well. And now we have this recent killing of Mr. Hernandez, who, by the way, is was a Seaside resident, but whose stepdaughter, stepdaughters, I'm sorry, There were three of them that lived in Salinas, and that's whose house he was visiting the night of the early morning that he was killed by the Salinas Police Department. And I think what's real interesting is that the initial reports basically that were printed in both the Herald and the California newspaper just basically painted this as a mentally ill guy with a knife going after the police, and the police had no alternative but to shoot him. Now the one of the stepdaughters is now saying that that's absolutely untrue, that the shooting was totally unjustified, and now they're going to be seeking court remedies as well as possibly calling for prosecution of police officers for killing their stepfather.
Well, I see in the Californian Relative says force excessive by Julie Copeland quotes Joe Hernandez. Actually, I'm sorry, Tonya, or is it Tanya?
Tanya,
I guess they were misreading her name, but the Salinas woman who made a call to police early Thursday morning concerning the welfare of her stepfather said she thinks officers used excessive force in the fatal standoff. 21-year-old Tanya Hernandez, they say Tonya, admits her stepfather was troubled. In fact, that's why she called the police. She wanted them to ask Joseph Joe Hernandez to go home. Sometimes he would get sick, and he was tired of being sick. Tonya said he wanted help. What happened after the call made to the non-emergency line of the police department has left Tanya and her family asking why police use deadly force. My dad wasn't going to hurt us. He wouldn't hurt anyone, Tanya said. I asked police to come and ask him to leave. They totally overreacted. I called him to help him, not to hurt him. Here's how Tanya describes what unfolded Thursday morning. Now, there's quite a long story, which I'm going to read. I think I'll read it after
right.
We've had our conversation. You've read the story. Is there stuff you want to talk
absolutely.
About?
That, and,
What happened there first? Give us the summary, as you understand it.
Yeah, well basically what's happened, and a friend of mine by the name of Tony Barrera, who is the president of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in Salinas, is real close friends with this family and has been in touch with them since the tragedy. And I've also found out just earlier this morning that one of our Salinas members of our task force actually worked with one of the family members in a previous job. So we have two people now who really know this family, and they've been in touch with them and talked with them. And basically, I think it's, as you pointed out, I think what people have to kind of focus in on is the nature of the call. As she was saying, she did not dial 911 because she did not consider this to be an emergency. Mr. Hernandez, unfortunately, had a long history of a mental illness, as she was stating, and these police and the Seaside police, the Salinas Police Department also knew Mr. Hernandez because there, on at least one other occasion, she had called him for assistance because he was in mental distress as well. So they had knowledge of this man, they had knowledge of the family, and she also dialed, as I mentioned, a non-emergency phone number. She said that she was shocked and horrified, as were the neighbors, who were awakened by the commotion of numerous police cars pulling up on the scene. And as we're finding out now, they actually deployed, they call it the violence suppression unit, but it's actually a SWAT team for a man with a 5-inch knife who was talking about possibly killing himself, not other people.
Now, the original Herald story makes some claims. It claims that there was a siege of 6 hours. It claims that Hernandez set 2 fires. It claims that they were using the hostage negotiation unit. Let's deal with these concerns. Have you heard anything that might confirm or deny these claims?
Well, all I can tell you is that, through our member of the task force, Kurt Brooks, and also from Tony Barrera, the stepdaughter Tanya is saying that that's not true either.
Which is not true.
That they had to kick down a door in which Mr. Hernandez had barricaded himself with with various pieces of furniture. She was saying that there's no evidence that any door has ever been kicked in. There were no broken doors. There were no heel prints or boot prints or cracked doors or anything like that to suggest that someone had to break down a door to get to the center.
What actually happened, Mel? I mean, was there a six-hour standoff? Do you know anything about that?
Tanya Hernandez verifies this, that they were there for this period of time. But the fact of the matter is that the way that they proceeded with this, with so-called resolving the situation was almost as if they were prepared certainly to conclude this, by use of the SWAT team. I think the other thing that's real critical here is that meaning the Charles E. Vaughn Senior Task Force on Mental Health Police Practices, have long been advocating not only universal protocols for handling people who are in mental distress, and not only have we been advocating for extensive trainings, which none of these departments have had in working with people who have mental illness. We've advocated from the very beginning that these trainings also be instituted in the police academy so that police could begin their training, as a part of their graduation requirements from the police academies, and that those trainings are ongoing within whatever police department that they get assigned to throughout the state of California. But the big one for us is the emergency response team, or some people would call them a crisis team. We've been in touch with such units in police departments and mental health departments in places like Memphis and Albuquerque and other places throughout the country. The police in Memphis had told me that the greatest thing that they felt that their police department had ever done was to create such a team, which is a team of specially trained police officers, specially trained in mental health, along with mental health specialists. So you have a team of people going out, and you also have the mental health specialists there, who know about mental illness and who know how to work with people
in
psychiatric distress.
How long has their team been in place?
Well, the Memphis team has been in place for, at this time, close to a decade.
How do police shootings now compare with police shootings then? Do you know?
They said that they had a number of killings of people who have been mentally ill, and I don't think that there's been one fatality since they've instituted their crisis team.
Well, my question is kind of, I'm no big fan of mental health bureaucrats either, although I prefer them to armed police officers. But I guess I'm wondering, is this you didn't hear a lot 20 or 30 years ago, maybe it just wasn't reported or I wasn't listening, about people who are, quote, mentally ill being shot down in the numbers that they're being shot down these days. Now, does this mean more people are cracking up? Does this mean police feel they're going to tolerate a lower level of aberrant behavior? Does this mean police are being told they can proceed with more military solutions regardless of the person? I mean, what does this mean to you? I mean, do you have this impression too, or is this just my impression?
Well, my sense is that people who were diagnosed with mental illness, or if they were alive today, probably would have been diagnosed with mental illness, were being killed anyway, and I think they were all being lumped together with all of the other people who were being killed by the police. Mental illness is something that has been somewhat taken out of the closet, and so now. It's a little bit easier.
So you don't see an upsurge?
To define, mm-hmm. Who is supposedly mentally ill and who is not, who is being killed by the police.
Mm-hmm.
See, we have another problem here too, and that is that after this shooting, and also Mr. Hernandez was shot 38 times.
You mean they were 38 bullets in his body, or 38 shots fired?
Mr. Hernandez, right.
38 holes in his body?
Right.
Is according to who?
To pick up so far.
Is this the coroner, or this?
Probably every single member of the SWAT team had a shot at him, and in fact, one police officer was shot in the crossfire.
Right, I read that.
Okay.
Now, you were telling me earlier that you thought that the 38 bullets were fired in terms of the number of holes in the surrounding area. But has there been a further report? I mean, has the coroner been reached to indicate
and
that
the coroner hasn't been reached, and so this will need to be verified.
Right, I got you.
But even if it's not, if that's not the case, and if what I'm hearing is not true, the fact that 38 bullets were fired is absolutely horrendous. What we are saying that it needs to happen, and this is not only for the killings of people who have been diagnosed as mental illness, but when cops kill people, period, that what needs to be in place is a civilian review board, but not like any other civilian review board that exists now, which is basically a rubber stamp
for the
different cities and jurisdictions. But a civilian review board that, like the district attorney's office, would have its own investigator and would also have its own prosecutor. So that way you will have a true independent investigation of police shootings, of police misconduct in general. And then where warranted, an independent civilian review board prosecutor could then prosecute these police officers, take them to court, and if they're found guilty, begin putting them in prison.
Well, you certainly need an independent prosecutor, because we know the prosecutors generally rely very closely on their close relationships with the police department.
Yeah, absolutely. And IBA here has been a long-time member and actually an official of the Monterey County Police Chiefs Association. And the other thing that's happening here, too, is that the Salinas Police Department, the day after the shooting, began its own investigation. Now, this is fairly unprecedented, I would imagine, because supposedly what's supposed to happen first is that the district attorney's office is supposed to come in, do its investigation, and then the police department then does this investigation later.
Well, I know in the case of Happy John Dine in Santa Cruz, deputy sheriffs interviewed officers Carey and Connor, the two individuals who drew their guns on Happy John Dine, and I guess it was a part of the district attorney's investigation through the sheriffs. So maybe the same thing was supposed to happen in Salinas?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you know, the impression that people are getting now is that the Salinas Police Department is cleaning up its crime scene. So what is there going to be for the district attorney's office to investigate?
You mean by cleaning up the crime scene, by kind of whitewashing the scene?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Making things look better. I mean, this is the impression that they give. I mean, for me, about the worst thing that the police department at this particular point in time could do is to start carrying out actions, you know, that are going to kind of leave it up to people's imaginations about what these actions imply. And if you have a police department going in right after, you know, something this horrendous has happened, and begin going back over the crime scene and doing their own investigation before the district attorney gets there, what is that saying? Not that I have any faith in the district attorney coming in and doing a great investigation either. But the fact of the matter is that they've even violated their own procedures at this particular point in time.
You know, Mel, we've heard
that mean.
I think it's what it means is, unfortunately, it seems rather ominous. I know that in San Jose, we've heard that of 8 police shootings, 7 of them fatal this year. San Jose police have been shooting them down as fast as they can stand up, almost.
Right.
And, you know, the most recent one was the killing of Mark Garcia.
Right.
Again, I kind of titled that Dial 911 for Murder, because what happened there was, I guess, a relative called 911 to get some help for the man.
Right.
And he ended up helping him into his grave. And that of course is, you know, has been a scandal for the last 2 or 3 months.
Absolutely.
But you know, I don't know, these things, they rise briefly, you can smell or hear them, and the odor is quickly perfumed away. So what you know, I mean, I'm look what happened to Charles Vaughn Sr. We don't have any kind of I guess no accountability for the officers who killed him.
Absolutely, you know. I mean, the suit, you know, that was filed by Charles Vaughn Jr. is still being dealt with through courts. That's $10 million per jurisdiction. You know, $10 million for the city of Seaside and $10 million for mental health, which, you know, certainly played a big role in Chuck's death. You know, there's still the struggle to get those police officers prosecuted. You know, we're having real difficulty, you know, getting the Justice Department to come in and do what really should be, you know, automatically its job. But you know, that takes struggle. That takes organization, and it takes massive struggle to get justice for working people. You know,
are activists coming out of the woodwork in Seaside in the case of the killing of Jose Hernandez?
And we are. Our task force. In fact, we just had a meeting about a week ago, and now we're having an emergency meeting tomorrow. We have invited Tanya Hernandez and the rest of the Hernandez family to this meeting. I think that Tony Barrera and Kurt Brooks will be making sure that they get to our meeting. One is that we want to, them to know that we're here to support them. And secondly, we will be talking more tomorrow night as a group in terms of how we can best proceed to bring justice to the situation for Mr. Hernandez.
Is there a number that folks can reach you guys at to get some more information?
Yes, it's area code 831-394-2869.
394-2869. I'm going to get this right. 394-2869 in the same area code that we're in here in Santa Cruz. Again,
that's the Seaside. That's my home phone number here.
So, Mel, you're kind of doing frontline troubleshooting for the Charles Vaughn Senior Task Force. And again, the phone number we're talking to Mel Mason is 394-2869. Do I have that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. And if anybody is missing any of these numbers, either now or in the course of the show, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll straighten you out. Mel, what is any kind of public, is there a coroner's inquest? Is there anything else scheduled here? What's cooking?
Well, that's, they haven't mentioned that at all in the newspapers, but that's, supposedly a part of the process, so we would assume that that's either happening right now or should be happening at the top of this week. And that's another thing that we'll be checking on as well.
Any more information about the killing that hasn't showed up in the papers you think we should know about?
I think that's, that's pretty much it for right now. We'll certainly be continuing our own investigation as a task force to see what other information that may be out there. I think it's important for folks to understand that, one, that this task force has been kind of on the case, since Charles Vaughn Sr.'s killing. We've been involved with other situations that have cropped up since then in terms of killing and other kinds of police misconduct. The county of Monterey, had about 4 months after we formed our task force, they formed a task force to kind of mimic ours to make it look like that they were carrying out the goals and objectives that our task force had already laid out and had already begun working on. They refused to allow us to have representation on that task force for over a year. We just recently got representation on that task force, and right now we're calling for a special meeting of that task force as well. So that we can address this particular killing and begin to deal with the process of bringing justice to the situation and for Mr. Hernandez and his family.
Maybe the appointment of a special prosecutor. I like your idea of a police review board, which is prosecutory powers.
Absolutely, that's the only thing that's going to work. And I think unfortunately, you had an opportunity to see what these other kind of review boards do in the case of the killing of Happy John Dying.
Right.
In which the civilian review board or whatever you call the thing over there in Santa Cruz.
We call it the
rubber stamp.
Right. We call it the civilian citizens police rah-rah board is what we call it.
Right. And we want one that's not up, that's not under the jurisdiction of a city council, but it would be its own independent entity. With all of those components that I just mentioned, the most critical one I think being. The critical ones being the individual and investigatory power, and also the prosecutorial power. Those two components are absolutely necessary if you're going to have a real.
And you intend to go about this with some sort of initiative, or what is your?
That's what we've been discussing with people throughout the county, and at some point in time we're going to probably organize an initiative drive like that. To put such a thing on the ballot.
Right. Well, Mel, we've been talking to Mel Mason here, who's a former Seaside City Council person, as well as a longtime activist concerned with issues of keeping the police department on the straight and narrow and making sure that those labeled mentally ill don't get bumped off and then bumped under the rug, as happened with Charles Vaughn Sr. Anything you want to conclude with, Mel?
Just that people need to people have to get involved, and I think people need to organize at the front end of this stuff. You know, we, you know, we're trying as much as we can to be proactive, and I think people need to take proactive stances. People who have been diagnosed with mental illness are pretty much at the lowest rung of our socioeconomic ladder, and I think for a lot of police officers and for a lot of police departments in general, that the killing of these of people who have been diagnosed with mental illness, they feel, will be killings that will have no response whatsoever. And I think what people need to do is to go to their city council meeting to begin to orient their own political or civic organizations to the plight of people who have been diagnosed with mental illness, and go to those city council meetings and tell them that you are absolutely not going to put up with police misconduct in general, and especially misconduct, you know, as it relates to people who have been diagnosed with mental illness, because those are the most defenseless people that we have in our society, and we need to be seen as standing up in support of them.
I appreciate that, Mel. And one last thing, and this is sort of on a somewhat different topic. I don't know if you were aware of it, but there was a meetings were held statewide yesterday, or at least in the Santa Cruz locality on, not yesterday, Friday, regarding the issue of exchanging the civil commitment laws, which essentially would loosen things up and make civil commitment easier for the authorities. Have you been following that struggle?
Would this be civil commitment for people who are mentally ill?
Right.
Yeah. In fact, our task force is working with a group called the California Network of Mental Health Clients.
Yeah.
And I've been long associated with them. They are the mental health advocacy group for clients in California. The executive director of that organization's name is Sally Zinman, who was also at the White House conference on mental illness.
You had me worried there for a minute. I like Sally. Yeah, she's a firefighter.
She spoke at one of our recent task force meetings, and so she's an ally. We're an ally with their struggle. We're totally opposed to these. Basically, these are destruction of the civil and constitutional rights of people who have mental illness. It took a fierce struggle over a lot of years to win patient rights, and now there's this move, this really right-wing backlash move to wipe out all of those gains of the patient's rights movement. And the big ones being, you know, easier confinement, you know, which is taking us back to a time when, you know, you could just drive somebody up to the mental ward and just say, hey, this person is crazy, and they would just take them in.
Mm-hmm.
We're opposed to that. And we're also opposed to this move to for forced outpatient treatment, which we feel will lead to more Charles Bonds, to more Joe Hernandez's, to more Mark Garcia's. We're looking at these things as being incredibly reactionary and should be fought against by everybody.
Well, thank you, Mel, and perhaps we'll talk to you more about those issues in detail next time we talk.
Okay.
Again, to get in touch with Mel Mason, give a call to 394-2869 for information on the breaking Jose Hernandez killing. Thank you, Mel.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We have open phone lines at 427-3772 if you wish to join in this discussion about how do you deal with police killings, and police killings that seem to be under suspicious circumstances or seem to be unnecessary, and how do you deal with the subsequent cover-up of those killings. We have our own police problems here in Santa Cruz. As I said, two nights ago on Thursday night, we had a memorial for Happy John Dine, the man who was shot twice fatally by Officer Connor Carey on November 12, 1997. The first reports after that, and the ones confirmed by the police chief and district attorney Art Danner at that time, now Judge Danner, claimed that Dine had been standing in a combat position with a weapon in his hand pointed at the police officer in a threatening manner visible for all to see. Each of those phrases was eventually disputed and contradicted, or else at least not corroborated, by every single non-police related witness in that case. from Alani Balawager standing on the roof of the New Leaf Market, to Stacy Buckaloo driving past, to, was it Joe Murphy, walking down the street nearby, and there were actually about 10 or 15 witnesses, some of whom would not identify who they were, but we spoke to them through second and third hand sources. And indeed, the police review board, our local police review board, heard those people, some of them, and turned a deaf ear. They wouldn't even hold an emergency meeting or demand an early investigation or have a public hearing on the issue. And they ended up rubber stamping what the police chief and district attorney's false version of it was. Allegedly, the final story that was claimed by the CPRB was that the man who was killed, Happy John Dine, was reaching for a toy gun. And Kerry had to make sure he didn't get whatever he was reaching for. And they had received a report earlier of a man with a toy gun. And the problem, of course, is regardless of who you believe in this case, there was no real investigation of the issue, and there's no real accountability, as there will be no accountability for Officer David Lefevre, Officer Tripp, Sergeant McMahon, all the other police officers involved in the bumbling screw-ups of May 22nd, which luckily didn't involve severe injury or death to anyone in the botched dealing with the protesters outside the McPherson Center, the protest about the bombing of Yugoslavia on May 22nd. But nonetheless, there are plenty of people who are going to go to jail because the police can't admit their own mistakes and instead collude with the prosecution to scapegoat other people. And our Citizens Police Review Board will spend $10,000 on an independent investigator. And according to a recent report released from the Citizens Police Review Board, I'm going to read you the text of that memo in just a moment. The City Council has now concluded behind closed doors, without any public input on the issue, at its closed session, that